This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Troy Radio, episode 529, coming to you on Wednesday, January 10th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including the Trojans getting a couple of big transfer portal gets. Some new coaching news in the college football world and the pro football world, I guess. And so much more here on this episode, including the nominees for the annual Roddies. The Raina Troy Awards going to come up next week. We're super excited about that, so we're going to give you the nominees this week. Give you a chance, the Rotbots, a chance to vote and have your say in the Roddies. So look forward to that later on in this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Raina of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Raina of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, wherever you get your pods, we are there. Email address, reignoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227. Second Whisper and Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Raina Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello! Alicia, it is over. It is over.
The season?
No, the Pete Carroll era.
The Pete Carroll era is over.
Yeah.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, it has been over at USC, and this is my annual reminder because the College Football Hall of Fame inductees for 2024 were just announced. This is my annual reminder that Pete Carroll is ineligible for the College Football Hall of Fame because they have an arbitrary requirement for coaches that they have had to have coached 10 years. 100 games, and Pete Carroll coached 9 years, 97 games.
Yes.
60% win percentage as well as part of the...
Bill Walsh, who Pete Carroll coached under in San Francisco, famously returned to college football after he retired from the NFL. Coached for the Stanford Cardinal in the early 90s. Wouldn't it be cool? It'd be cool to see it repeat.
He's an NFL guy, but so I don't know what his priorities are.
Sure.
But if I was Pete Carroll, I would absolutely be keeping my eyes out for an opportunity where I could go coach a couple years and get the Hall of Fame. That's what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be cool. Even if he like went back to his, I think it was at Pacific?
Yeah, Pacific.
Not Azusa Pacific, but just
no,
Pacific, I think. Do they even have a football team still?
I have no idea.
Don't even know. Either way, I think it'd be a good bet for him to get into the Hall of Fame if he was able to come back and coach another season in college football. But I'll tell you what else is a good bet, Alicia. DraftKings. Trojan fans, you can go over to DraftKings. They have a fantastic sign-up offer and bonus for new users right now. You can place a bet for $5 on anything to instantly claim $200 in bonus bets. You'll also be able to be rewarded with a separate no-sweat single-game parlay every single day when you opt in. Perfect time for the NFL playoffs. And the best part is that you will receive both rewards even if your first bet loses. So when you join DraftKings, be sure to use the sign-up code Reign of Troy, all one word, Reign of Troy. Using the code Reign of Troy not only gets you the great bonuses, but helps directly support this very podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code RANDOMTROY to maximize your first bets and parlays. The offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. As always, there's a ton of news to get to. So, Alicia, let's just not beat around the bush and get right to it, huh?
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's start with USC news. I know everyone wants to talk about Nick Saban retiring. We could talk about Pete Carroll till we're blue in the face, but we got to talk about USC's new quarterback, Jaden Maiava, the UNLV quarterback, has committed to the Trojans in a big recruiting flipping from Georgia to the Trojans on Tuesday night. Greg Biggins of 247 crystal balled Maiava to USC on Monday and then changed it to Georgia in the afternoon. On Monday evening, committed to Georgia. On Tuesday, there were rumblings that USC was still on it, and Tuesday night, he flipped to USC. Wednesday, he officially announced his commitment to the Trojans. Maiava, 6'4", 220. 3 years of eligibility remaining. He was the Mountain West Freshman of the Year. Completed 63.5% of his passes for the Rebs. 3,000 yards, 17 TDs, 10 picks, passer rating of 147.1. 277 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns. Bright future for this kid coming over to SC in an interesting spot because there's Miller Moss and now there's Jaden Maiava. Not Kaluka, but Jaden.
Jaden Maiava. This was a kid that as soon as he came back into the transfer portal, I identified as somebody that would fit the profile of what USC needed as far as a quarterback to add this year pretty much perfectly. If you couldn't get somebody like Dante Moore, who I think would be considered probably the best of that range of quarterback, Jaden Maiava stands out as a pretty solid get here. He was productive at UNLV. He was effective, obviously Mountain West Freshman of the Year. He came in after a few games because of an injury. He started as a backup and then took over the starting job and really took over that role and really developed as a leader and a quarterback and was a bit of a gamer and seemed like he has a bright future. He comes to USC at a time when a starting job is by no means guaranteed. Lincoln Riley has stated that there will be an open competition in the spring, but you need multiple quarterbacks in order to have an open competition in the spring. And Miller Moss's Holiday Bowl performance, I think, made it really difficult for USC to recruit the upper echelon quarterbacks that were out there in the portal, mm-hmm. because Miller Moss has been developing in Lincoln Riley's system for 2 years. And what he showed in the Holiday Bowl shows he's you know, pretty capable. It might be difficult to beat him in a competition when you arrive at the earliest in the spring and then have to sort of hope that you end up in a starting job if you're one of those top tier guys. So Maiava is not in that top tier, but he's one of those players that has the eligibility available that he can come into USC and bet on himself and say, you know what, mm-hmm. I'm going to hit the ground running so hard that I'm going to win the starting job in 2024, which should be his mentality. But also, if he doesn't win the starting job in 2024, it's not the end of the world because he has eligibility. he can continue to grow and learn in the system, learn from Lincoln Riley, the quarterback guru himself, and then try to win the job if Miller Moss ends up leaving after 2024 or reevaluating his options after that season. So he gives USC the depth that USC lost with Malachi Nelson, mm-hmm. Who, by the way, we didn't put in the rundown, but Malachi Nelson committed to Boise State.
Yeah.
So that's where Malachi Nelson has landed. It's interesting that USC picks up a G5 quarterback to replace a five-star guy who ends up in the G5 anyways. So I thought that was interesting. But either way, this is in terms of profile, feels really, really strong. Gives USC that tiny bit more depth that they needed. I would argue it wouldn't go wrong with another quarterback, but that might be pushing their luck a little bit. Jake Jensen might have to be the third guy. But for now, this was extremely necessary. USC could not go into spring camp and feel good about the only sort of established scholarship quarterback on the roster being Miller Moss. That's not how a competition happens.
Yeah.
I will say, just to be honest, the recruiting around Jaden Maiva makes me a little nervous.
In what sense?
In the sense that he visited USC over the weekend. Things sounded like they were pretty good with USC. Monday morning, Greg Biggins says, crystal ball. He's going to USC. Now, I don't know where that crystal ball came from, but usually a guy of Greg Biggins' stature, when he puts in a crystal ball, it's because he's got a good source and he knows.
Right.
And then out of nowhere, boom, no, actually it's Georgia. And he commits to Georgia on Monday night. He's going to Georgia. He gives quotes to recruiting services. I picked Georgia. I want to compete at Georgia, blah, blah, blah. And then Tuesday, it's like, well, wait, no. Just kidding. Going to USC. Like, I never want to read too much into the wishy-washiness of these guys as the huge decisions. I've been wishy-washy on huge decisions in the past, and I get it that you can make a decision and then regret it, or you can reevaluate, or you can sort of go back and flip or whatever. That happens. That doesn't have to be mm-hmm. like a red flag. But there is the question of, okay, well, what changed? What changed between Monday morning and Monday night? What changed between Monday night and Tuesday? What role does NIL have to do with this? What role will NIL have to do with this, that, or the other thing? Are you actually willing to stick it out if by the end of spring you have a situation where it is very clear that Miller Moss is going to be the starting quarterback? Are you willing to sit behind Miller Moss in 2024 if that's the way things fall out? Like, this is a guy who spent the last season as a regular starter at UNLV. And we know that, like, at Oregon, Dylan Gabriel is there for a year, but Miller Moss has more than a year of eligibility available, so he might be there for 2 years. Is you know, what's the long-term future of Jaden Maiva if he doesn't win the starting job right away? Mm-hmm. And what will that look like in terms of additional transfers or you know, behind the scenes, you know, dissatisfaction or anything like that? Like, I don't know. I'm not, this is pure speculation that has nothing to do with any knowledge of this kid or anything like that. It's just one of those things where USC was always going to find itself in a tricky situation at quarterback this year. And it feels like that situation, this is huge for resolving that situation, but that doesn't mean that the trickiness of it isn't still something that USC has to navigate very carefully.
I don't know that it's a bad thing that he flipped and flipped back.
Well, he's coming to USC, which I think is literally the most important thing.
Well, yes, but like, we're in the NIL world, right? So if Georgia can come in at the last second and get him to flip to them, and SC could still get him to flip him back, shouldn't that make you feel better about SC's ability to recruit in sort of this landscape?
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like it should, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think the interesting thing for Maiva is that he, like, SC was in a position like you've outlined in terms of numbers of needing bodies. And if you have so many options this offseason. You can go all in on Miller Moss. You could go all in on a transfer quarterback like Will Howard, who ultimately went to Ohio State. There was Cam Ward, who ultimately went to the NFL. You could have gone all in on those guys for the one-year, one-and-done kind of thing. Or you could kind of hedge your bets and go in with Maiava, someone like Maiava and Moss, to push each other, see what happens for this next season, and sort of like where you're at and trust the process of your scheme, trust your ability to recruit those guys, trust your ability to see what you can get the most out of them, etc. And that's the route they went down. Is it the route I would have predicted before the season? No, but I think that we've talked about it before. If there's anyone to be trusted with quarterbacks, it's Lincoln Riley. If Lincoln Riley has decided that his trust is in the combination of Moss and Maiava, whoever that ends up being at the end of August, then so be it. I think, you know, Lincoln Riley has deserved the benefit of the doubt when it comes to quarterbacks. So it's going to be interesting. I would never have bet this in a million years that USC's quarterbacks would have been Moss and Maiava going into next season at all. And yeah, then, you know, you look at the numbers, and it's fascinating to look at Jaden Maiava's numbers. In November alone, 13th in the country with a passer rating of 171.05. Of those quarterbacks who were ranked with better passer ratings, only 8 of them had passing had only 6 of them have had higher yards per attempt than Maiava. And those guys, let's see if you know them: Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Preston Stone, Jaden Milroe, Daquan Finn, and Rocco Becht. You know most of those guys, right?
Yeah.
It's good company. It's good company to be in.
Well,
and that was at UNLV with in the Mountain West. So what can he do in the Big Ten, which is, God, that's weird to say. But with, you know, SC's talent around him, with Zachariah Branch and with whoever else USC has at receiver to throw the ball to, Kyron Hudson, Deuce Robinson, Lake McCree, all those guys, plus Lincoln Riley, who we've talked about it before, every quarterback who's been under him has been a success. So there's no reason to think that whether it's Moss or Maiava that they're not going to be a success this year, next year, just at least in terms of succeeding. Yeah, yeah, there's the word.
Well,
and failing, they're going to be on the succeeding side of that thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I am fairly comfortable with a competition between Miller Moss and Jaden Maiava.
Right.
The way I see it, Miller Moss is USC's 2024 quarterback, and Jaden Maiava is an intriguing backup.
That's the way it looks, but if that's not the case, if Maiava beats him out,
that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, 100%. Which is why I think this is such a big get for USC, because it's a safety blanket.
When was the last time you had a quarterback battle at SC where it felt like there was some equity for multiple dudes going into the quarterback battle?
Sears.
You're going to talk about Sears, Slovis, Daniels?
Yeah, Sears, Slovis, Daniels.
I think that was always going to be JT.
But he was a true freshman. It
didn't really feel like there was Maiava and Moss have, like, Maiava's got the experience of several game starts. Moss has the experience of being at USC, but like that sort of balances out a little bit. I think it's pretty equal footing.
Honestly, I don't think it's equal footing. I think this is Miller Moss's job.
If so, then, you know, more power to him. We'll see how it goes. The other option, as our friend Tim in LA is hoping for, is Caleb Williams coming back for year 3 at USC. He's given us a super chat and said, donating so you roast me again for holding out hope that Caleb Williams doesn't declare for the draft. He has not publicly declared.
Mm-hmm.
Will you do? What will you do on this very podcast if he comes back?
If Caleb Williams...
Raw oysters? Do you do raw oysters? No.
No, because in order to do oysters, we'd have to procure oysters.
Yeah,
and I'm not putting that much effort into it.
This is true.
I will.
Would you have one of Jesse's biscuits?
No. 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 What I will do is I will take a pickle and dip it in.
Tim says hot sauce.
Hot sauce. Okay. We will take a pickle and dip it in hot sauce.
Wow.
If he comes back. It'll be probably like sriracha or something like that because we have that. And my brother has pickles, so I can go, you know, grab a pickle from my brother and sister-in-law and that'll be that. But I don't need to do that because guess what? He's not coming back, y'all.
He
waited until literally the last possible second to announce his like coming to USC in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
He is not spurning the draft. I know that there's crazy things happening and guys that you wouldn't expect to come back have come back, but the chances of Caleb Williams deciding not to be the number one pick in the 2024 NFL draft
maybe the Bears still want to go all in on Justin Fields.
If they want to go all in on Justin Fields, that's fine. Caleb Williams can go to the Commanders and go home. Like, he is not coming back. I am beyond certain. I've gotten tricked into convincing myself that maybe Juju, maybe Adoree, maybe they want to come back and win something.
I remember convincing myself it was going to be Lendale.
Yeah, no, a million guys that we've convinced ourselves were going to come back. They don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb Williams is not coming back. He is going to the draft. If he does not, I, live on air, will eat a pickle dipped in hot sauce. Book it.
Yeah. They don't come back just like Jack doesn't survive at the end of Titanic. He never does. You might think he does, but he doesn't. For all intents and purposes, Caleb Williams declared for the NFL
when draft, he sat out the bowl.
When he sat out the bowl game.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sat out the bowl game. That was it. Realistically, I think he declared for the NFL draft when he scored that touchdown in Red River as a true freshman. I think that's when he declared for the NFL draft. Yeah, he's not coming back, says Funny on MC in the chat. Other transfer portal stuff to talk about. USC has gotten a big commit from Isaiah Rakes, 6'2", 320, nose tackle from Texas A&M, the Aggies. 1 year of eligibility remaining. He graded out at 72.3. by Pro Football Focus. For reference, no USC defensive lineman with regular snaps rated better than Tyrone Tulenny's 70.2. So better than him. 17 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, a sack, pass deflection, and a forced fumble last year for the Aggs. Where stand you on this one?
This is huge. Huge. Yeah. Mostly because this guy is huge.
320?
320, a true nose tackle. This is what USC has been lacking in terms of a true nose tackle. I was hopeful that Keon Bars would come in and be that size guy next to Bear Alexander, and obviously that didn't work out. But this is a guy who comes in and is absolutely the nose tackle next to your defensive tackle, Bear Alexander. Last year, Danton Lynn on his defense had 325-pound Jay Toya at nose tackle, anchoring their line, playing a very critical role, even though in terms of production, Jay Toya didn't have a ton of production, but you don't need a ton of production from your nose tackle. You need them to be there to fill a hole, to eat up space, to be a large human being that is very difficult to move out of the way. And that is what Isaiah Rakes does. He is good against the run. He's got the size. He has a wealth of playing experience, even though he wasn't necessarily always a regular starter at Texas A&M. When you look at Isaiah Rakes, I think when you're USC and you're looking at Isaiah Rakes, knowing that he wasn't a regular starter at Texas A&M, you think, well, why couldn't he be Stevie Tuikolau Kolovatu, somebody who was buried on a depth chart at Utah and comes in and just gets his opportunity to be a large human in the middle who opens up opportunities for everybody else on that line. Rake should be Bear Alexander's best friend going into 2024. This is big. You just like USC couldn't go into the new season without another quarterback on the roster ready to go. It was going to be very difficult for USC to pull off this defensive turnaround if they didn't upgrade some size, especially in terms of the nose tackle position next to Bear Alexander. And USC has gotten some defensive linemen that I really like, that that I think can be very productive for this coming season in the transfer portal, but none of them have the sheer size that Rakes brings, and that's you can't overvalue that at all. I think this is potentially the biggest transfer, not just literal, but the biggest transfer that when we talk about whether or not USC was able to pull off the defensive transformation, USC has gotten a bunch of guys who I expect to be impact players, but those impact players will have an easier time of having an impact because theoretically somebody like Rakes being able to have just an anchor in the center of the defense, which is something that USC has not had essentially since Stevie Tuikulavatu.
So I feel like we talk about every year, could this guy be the Stevie T?
I mean, yes.
Stevie Tuikulavatu is so, like, if you're new to USC football and you don't get it, I feel bad because, like, I don't think there's a player who played a more pivotal value role in a football team than Stevie Tuikulavatu on that 2016 defense. Literally, it like literally played a gigantic role, like one role who just like made everything work around him. He wasn't the star of that defense, and that was the point. That was the point. He
didn't have to be. Green gets to be the star of that defense because Stevie T is in there. We had seen Rasheem Green the two years before not be nearly as effective, in part because USC didn't have somebody like that.
Yeah, and so I looked it up just now while you were talking. Stevie T at Utah, I'm like, how do these Rakes numbers compare? Well, Stevie T was more productive at Utah than Rakes was at A&M.
Well, I think
by double. But I think the interesting thing is, what do you think Stevie T's size listed on CFB stats is?
315?
6'1", 320.
There you go.
Rake 6'2", 320.
What I'll say, my quick perception, and obviously this is relatively new, so we haven't had a ton of time to like deep dive into Rakes the way that we got to experience CVT. I don't think you can expect the pass rushing effectiveness that Stevie T brought to the table from Isaiah Rakes. I don't think that's
he wasn't a big pass rusher though.
No,
either.
But he was disruptive. He was a
run stopper.
Yes, he was a run stopper, but he was also disruptive. He was reasonably productive in that sense.
Yeah.
I think when you're looking at what USC is going to get out of Rakes, you shouldn't think of productivity. Like, number one, I think any productivity you get from a nose tackle is a cherry on
it's
top,
a plus,
the way
yes,
that I see
100%.
It. 100%. But you have to look at it from in that way. There are nose tackles that you get productivity out of, and those are extremely, extremely valuable. But tackles and tackles for loss and sacks, those stats don't matter as much to me for a nose tackle, because that's generally their job is not to be.
Yeah.
Their job is to help everybody else be more productive. It's a really thankless job, but a critical one that USC has been lacking. So the lack of productivity, and it's not like he's completely unproductive. He's just, he wasn't a regular starter. And when he was in there, he wasn't necessarily like racking up tackles or tackles for loss, but that's not necessarily what you would expect. That's why I put the PFF numbers there, because he was perfectly effective from a Pro Football Focus, you know, take it or leave it for what it is. But it is a good way for us to like quantify things a little bit when we don't necessarily have the ability to sit here and like, you know, watch a bunch of tape and grade stuff out ourselves.
Right.
So like in that sense, I am, as I'm talking right now, I want to look at UCLA. Like What was Jay Toya's PFF grade this past year? Because I know it wasn't that good, but you know, UCLA would tell you that Jay Toya was, yeah, Jay Toya graded out as a 56.3 at nose tackle this year.
By the way,
that's pretty bad in terms of like PFF grade, but
Jay Toya, 28 total tackles in 2023,
mm-hmm.
identical to Stevie Tuilagalavatu's 28 at Utah in 2015.
Yeah.
Hey, just saying.
But my larger point being is that like the fact that Rakes was grading out as highly as he did on PFF is a really good sign that he
right.
Has his technique relatively mm-hmm. well. He covers his assignments relatively well, all those kinds of stuff. And then he obviously brings the size. And we know that Danton Lynn's defense can be extremely effective with a space eater who, you know, grades out significantly lower than that, but opens up opportunities for the talented guys on the edge. Now, the question for USC is, can USC get Leatu Latu and Gabriel Murphy level productivity from the guys on the edge? Well, I don't think there's any reason why you can't expect Bear Alexander to come out and be like, look like an NFL guy, a future NFL guy. Right. The bigger question is what does USC's guy, what do guys, USC's guy do on the edge and all of that kind of stuff. But you are now set up to give those guys that opportunity because you have a run stopping nose tackle with legitimate size in the center of your defense.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see how Rakes comes in there. Alex in the chat says, I can't wait till spring practice. It's amazing really how like the combination of the Holiday Bowl, the transfer portal, all this stuff, the hire of Danton Lynn, all of this, I think people have rebought in. Like, there's this cycle, right? Like, there's this ongoing cycle of how of how college football fandom goes. In the off season, it ramps up at the beginning because all this stuff happens, and then there's this lull, and then it starts to ramp up again more and more and more as the season gets on. And then the season happens. Then all the anxiety of the season happens. All the frustrations of whatever happens. All the over magnification of every single results. Then the morale goes down if you're not winning, or up if you are. And then it just restarts over at the end of the year. Everything sort of ramps up towards next year, onward and upward. But someone who won't be here next year is Nick Saban. The other big news today, Nick Saban announces that he's retiring. He told the Alabama Crimson Tide. A lot of names out there. Dan Lanning is the top target per Brett McMurphy. Pete Thamel's targeted projected target list is Dan Lanning of Oregon, Kalen DeBoer of Washington, Dabo Swinney of Clemson, James Franklin of Penn State, Mike Norvell of Florida State, and Marcus Freeman of Notre Dame. There's a 30-day window for Alabama players to enter the transfer portal, and recruits can get out of their LOIs. Alicia, did you expect this? Because I feel like it came completely out of left field, out of nowhere. What is up with this timing? Was this him waiting until the end of the season so that way, like, he didn't, you know, upstage the national title game? Was it making sure that the recruiting cycle stuff was over? Like,
I got no clue. I think you're right that the timing of it makes it surprising. It shouldn't be surprising because we've been talking about Nick Saban retiring for several years now.
Right.
Earlier this season, I was on the Fall Start podcast and we were talking when Alabama was looking really shaky. And I was talking about how, you know, Nick Saban, he just doesn't look like he doesn't look engaged on the sideline. He doesn't look like he looked a little bit joyless early in the season. I think he recovered mm-hmm. that quite a bit as Alabama went on that run.
Yeah.
And you see what just a legendary level head coach he is, that on the downest year for Alabama I can remember, they still beat Georgia in the SEC title game and get to the playoff. Mm-hmm. So that tells you the level that he built at that program. But it's still a surprise and still unsettling to think about college football without Nick Saban at Alabama. It's just been the reality for so long. Aside from the obvious, like, just look back at the Nick Saban's dominance with Alabama and appreciation for his immense ability as a coach to reinvent himself over and over and over again, while always seeming to deal with the brain drain of his assistant coaches still being able to.
Well, I think that's the thing, right? Like we've talked about before, this happens the same day that Pete Carroll is out as the head coach of the Seahawks, which we talked about in the open. But
yeah,
I've always had so much respect for what Alabama has done under Nick Saban because of how crazy it's been that he's reinvented the wheel with himself multiple times, and he did what Pete Carroll couldn't do. On one hand, Pete Carroll didn't have the opportunity to do it at SC because he ended up leaving and going to the NFL with the Seahawks. The other part of it is, I don't know that Pete Carroll would have done it. Like,
well, who does it?
Nobody does it, right?
Even the great head coaches don't do it. Like, eventually you just...
You've got to fail before you reinvent yourself. Go look at Kiffin and Sark had to epically fail for them to sort of come back to a position where they could, you know, win 10 games and all that stuff. Like, Nick Saban, yes, he had those opportunities early on in his career, but when he got to Alabama and built the juggernaut, they are a completely different football team now than they were 15 years ago. 15 years ago, it was the talk was, well, Oregon's a gimmick offense and they run the blur. And here's Nick Saban, who 3 yards in a cloud of dust, who plays football the old fashioned way and is going to prove to everybody that's the right way to play. Now they're throwing the ball 50 times a game, just like everybody else.
Yeah, they have their quarterback has the record for the most passing yards in a national title game
They're completely different.
I'm forgetting everything. And
with all these different changes, all these different changes in the coaching staff, which is what Pete Carroll didn't do, because Pete Carroll had the brain drain and ended up where he started out and like Rocky Sutter was a grad transfer, and at the end Rocky Sutter was the defensive coordinator. He just moved everybody up the whole time.
Pete was able to deal with brain drain for a while, though. He lost Chow, replaced him with Kiffin, replaced Kiffin with Sark. But, like, eventually, yeah, you run out. Eventually, you run out of juice, and Nick Saban never did. But now he's retired, and now the feeding frenzy begins because, you know, the transfer portal is closed. You cannot enter the transfer portal. But if your coach...
Except for Alabama players.
If your coach leaves, fired, retired, anything like that... There is a 30-day window for players on that team to enter the portal. So Alabama is now going to be everybody is going to be on the radar for any players at Alabama who are interested in leaving. Any of their recruits can get out of their letters of intent. So those will be guys that everyone is targeting. It's definitely something to keep an eye out for. I did a quick look at their recruiting class, and there didn't necessarily see anyone that jumps out as like a USC was definitely in the mix for them. So I don't know what to expect on that front. I mean, Zabian Brown, the cornerback from Mater Dei, is there, and the and then Peyton Woodyard, the safety from St. John Bosco, is in that class. So local guys, but also I don't know.
I think it's a bit presumptuous to say that they wouldn't
just stick
recommit depending on who that is. It's going to matter who the hire is, right?
I mean, USC didn't have a good necessarily like relationship with either of those programs this past year. And I don't know, maybe Danton Lynn and Belk and those guys are able to do something a little bit different. But I think it's still very presumptuous to assume that USC would have a chance with any of those guys.
I think the craziest part about all of this is that, like, I would have expected that Nick Saban would have had it, would have made sure that Alabama had everything buttoned up and ready to go when he stepped away. And Alabama not being in that position where, like...
Well, we don't know if they're not. We don't know if they're not.
They're not giving the job to Tommy Reeks.
Oh, no. They're not promoting from within. But Connor Morissette from 24/7 Sports tweeted that he had heard that Alabama players were told, you know, give it 72 hours before you make a decision about whether or not you're going to enter the transfer portal. But maybe that means they have an idea of
maybe
this will get wrapped up real quick. And
I think that's possible. But like, I'm surprised that they didn't have an internal candidate sort of lined up. But then again,
well, the timing on that has to be right.
The timing has to be right. Yeah.
But I mean, if this had happened last year, they just promote Bill O'Brien, and I don't know that that's
right. I'm just thinking of like when Bobby Bowden stepped away and it went to Jimbo Fisher, like you had this sort of line of progression, right? Like when Mac Brown had a coach in waiting was Will Muschamp, and then he ultimately left, right? Like and didn't become the coach to replace him at Texas. But there was no coach in waiting situation. But I of all these names that like Pete Dammel puts out there, I think it's missing the two obvious ones, which I think are Sark and Kiffin.
Like, yeah, they've got to give.
I know that. Like
Sark should not leave Texas. Especially,
this is the only job that I think that Kiffin would wait out at Ole Miss for is to either go back to the NFL or Alabama. And if you're Nick Saban, if you don't like, if you're going to be pre-approved to anybody, if you're going to be like, yes, now go hire this person. Isn't it going to be Lane Kiffin? Someone that he took under his wing. He had all the coach rehabilitation stuff. Someone who has sort of paid his dues in the coaching ranks after failing at USC and bounce back and all that stuff. Like, I think it makes sense for Lane Kiffin. I really do. Like, I think the timing is right. I think everything is... like works out for him to be the guy. Like, you don't have to really change anything. They run the same offense. They do all this, the same kind of stuff. Like, Lane Kiffin is doing what Alabama is doing on a significantly smaller budget. Like, how is it not that? I get the point of like Dan Lanning and Kalen DeBoer, Lanning especially because we've seen him be successful at Georgia and the SEC. Under Kirby, but like Kiffin is the guy that just plugs in, right?
I think,
and it seems crazy. Like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be saying this right now, I would have laughed your head off.
No, I think that Kiffin makes a lot of sense. The problem for Alabama is the problem that every program has when evaluating coaching candidates. All of them have reasons they'll succeed and reasons they'll fail, sure. And you don't. No, you have to give it feel. The thing that I think might prevent Kiffin from getting this job ultimately is just the Kiffin of it all. Just the
Kiffin failing look
is
like?
Is he too quirky? Is he too?
I don't think so.
Do they want a defense minded head coach? Which I think wouldn't be a bad reason to look elsewhere. I don't know. I 100% agree that Kiffin makes a lot of sense for them. For some reason, I don't think that's going to happen. Steve Sarkisian should use this to get a raise and an extension from Texas, sure. But he should absolutely not leave Texas, where he's got it sort of pretty, he seems to have it figured out, and don't make that jump. Lanning is really interesting, but Lanning's a huge risk too. Like, we've seen a billion sort of hotshot young head coaches who get their
everybody is a risk. This is college everyone football, is, right?
Yeah, like, and that's why it's so intriguing. Like, it's so intriguing where Alabama goes next. And the good thing is that at Alabama, you land on third base and
right. Well, this is why, like, I think there's. You know, I think it was Stuart Mandel tweeted that you wouldn't want to be the coach to follow Saban. You want to be the one to follow the guy who gets fired 3 years from now for not winning 12 games a year. And while I think that's true, and that it's very likely that whoever replaces Saban ends up getting fired in a few years because they don't live up to that hype.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's equally just as true that whoever gets hired
wins
the title. Yeah, like the, yeah. That's how volatile it is. That's how volatile it is here, and it's interesting because if you're talking about like go hire the best coach in college football, then yeah, I would say go get Lanning or DeBoer probably for like long term. Like go hire the guy who you want to be the head coach for the next 20 years. Then it's Lanning or DeBoer for me. if
I would get DeBoer just because of the track record at NAIA level and
another guy who paid his dues, right?
But like paid his dues, what he's done at Washington, what he did at Fresno State, like he's gone up the ladder, and I think he's just way more proven to me than the other options.
Yes. I think the difference is DeBoer is more proven than Lanning. I think
Lanning's more exciting.
I think Lanning is more proven to work in the environment of like NIL and recruiting and all that kind of stuff, which makes that interesting there.
Yeah.
The other name, I know he's not high on the people's radar at the moment, but Lincoln Riley? Just saying.
No, absolutely not.
Just saying.
No, Alabama will not. Alabama wouldn't.
They wouldn't at this moment, for sure.
Even if USC was coming off of like a better season than this,
sure.
I still don't think that Lincoln Riley would ever be on Alabama's radar because the knock on Lincoln Riley is the soft thing, and there's no way they would follow up.
Okay, hypothetically, this is not a real scenario. Hypothetically, before we get to the Rod East nominations, hypothetically, let's say SC made the playoff last year and were okay, but didn't make the playoff this year. They went 10-2, finished third in the Pac-12. Lost to Oregon and Washington. Oregon and Washington clearly better, but in other words, SC didn't epically fail this year.
Mm-hmm.
Good, not great, but they did make the playoff last year. And Alabama does come calling for Lincoln Riley, and Lincoln Riley does make the jump to Alabama. How do you think SC fans would react? Would it be like Oklahoma people? Like,
no, because Oklahoma people are crazy, and like we haven't seen people react like that with most other Oklahoma people had an outsized reaction. Like USC people would be mad.
But I think it's because Oklahoma people had never had it in their never grasped the concept that somebody could leave from you to another blue blood.
Yeah.
And which I understand why, because it just doesn't happen.
But if Sark left Texas to go to Oklahoma to go to Alabama, I don't think Texas fans would have the reaction that Oklahoma fans did either. No, I think that's a whole other mental health crisis that's going on over there.
I think SC people, maybe I'm crazy.
SC people would lose their shit.
SC people, yes, but I think SC people would understand going from SC to Alabama more than Oklahoma people would understand going from Oklahoma to SC.
Yeah.
Even if we label all of these as sideways blue blood moves, because SC has dealt with so many coaches going to the NFL, that like I think SC people are predestined to have this idea that like there is a possibility that someone could always leave, even USC.
Yeah.
Whereas Oklahoma people never had that concept ever. Even if, Barry Switzer went to the NFL, because that was a different situation.
Because USC fans had to grapple with the idea of John McKay and Pete Carroll leaving the NFL.
That's what I'm saying. Anyways, that's not the reality we're in. We're in a different reality.
Just as a quick aside, there is a very not unreal chance that two of USC's new Big Ten, multiple of USC's new Big Ten rivals will undergo major coaching changes from Michigan, potentially losing Harbaugh to Oregon, potentially losing Lanning to Washington, potentially losing DeBoer. So
they can't all three happen, though.
Well, they could all three happen.
One of Lanning and DeBoer would have to go to the NFL.
DeBoer to the Seahawks, Harbaugh to anyone in the NFL, and Lanning to Bama.
And then the only person left in the Big Ten is Ryan Day, Ohio State fans can't stand.
Yeah, maybe this is James Franklin's year then.
Jeez. Yeah. Idea the Greater says Riley to Bama, Carroll to SC. There you go.
I take it.
All right. Let's go to the Roddies. It is time for the Roddies. We're going to talk about the nominees for this year's Roddies. If you're new to Rain of Troy, the Roddies are our annual award show. We do this every year. We have different awards. Some awards come back every year. Some don't. It depends on the year. It depends on whether or not we have things that fit. So let's start with the nominees. In the show notes, if you're listening to us as a podcast, go to the show notes on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and there's a link to a Google form where you can go and vote. vote for your responses, for your picks for the Roddies. If you're watching this on YouTube, there's a link in the show notes and the description
and
as well.
And there will be a link in the chat very shortly.
Yeah. So the Roddies, the way it's going to work, you guys will have an opportunity to vote. The top three selections will become the finalists. We have six nominees for everything. The top three will be the finalists. And next week we will decide equal weights with our votes, my votes, Alicia's vote, and the Robbot's votes. And those three votes will combine together to name the winner of the Roddies. So let's go. First Roddy of the Year nominees for the J.D. Booty Award. The award for the most underappreciated Trojan. It's Austin Jones, USC running back, Brendan Rice, wide receiver, Jalen Smith, defensive back, offensive lineman Jonah Monheim, tight end Lake McCree, and wide receiver Taj Washington. Those are the nominees. Alicia, your thoughts on this group of nominees?
That's a really strong group of nominees for this award. That's one of my favorites every year. I think any one of them would be deserving of the award. I think for me, Jalen Smith and Taj Washington are way up there. Jonah Monheim is definitely way up there as well. It's tough because there's always going to be underappreciated people, and you sort of have to weigh what level of appreciation like somebody like Brendan Rice or Taj Washington got relative to somebody like Monheim or McCree, who did a lot of really, really critical work. It's harder to gauge.
Yeah, I think Jalen Smith is someone who I might come next week and argue for Jalen Smith. I don't know yet, but I didn't realize how many tackles he made this season. He was USC's list.
Arguably the best player on defense for USC very much this season.
Especially in the Holiday Bowl, too. Yeah. So let's go to the next award, the Marquise Lee Award for the Individual Performance of the Year. You got Austin Jones, 127 rushing yards against Washington on 11 carries. Caleb Williams and his crazy overtime against Arizona at a touchdown and a two-point conversion as well. Eric Gentry's afternoon against Cal was nuts. Forced fumble, a pick, tackle for loss, three pass breakups. He was all over the place. There's Marshawn Lloyd's fourth quarter against Cal. He had a 187 of yards from scrimmage. But in the fourth quarter alone, like almost all of that came in the fourth quarter in USC's double-digit comeback against the Cal Bears up at Strawberry Canyon. Miller Moss, six touchdown performance in his first start as a Trojan in the Holiday Bowl. And then Zachariah Branch, 232 yards in his debut against San Jose State in week one. I think that one's going to be tough to beat. The Miller Moss game is going to be really tough to beat, too.
I think a lot of voting is going to go towards Miller Moss and Zachariah Branch, but you know where my vote is going. My vote is with Zero the Hero himself.
You don't give away your votes.
I'm teasing it.
I don't know that you are. I don't know.
I will say Caleb Williams against Arizona was one of the most impressive individual performances I've ever seen on a football field.
Well, so. It was wild because at the time he said it was his best and worst game.
He was terrible combined for large stretches of that game, and then he was everything. So, there's a lot.
Yeah. Let's go to the Brain Bleach Award, the moment you'd like to forget of the year. You got the second half versus Stanford. The fourth quarter versus Colorado. The first half against Notre Dame. The second half against Notre Dame. The whole game against UCLA. Or perhaps you're going to vote for all of 2023.
I don't know that there's a wrong answer, but I will say the second half versus Stanford was so bleached from my brain that I forgot that it was going to be nominated. So, yeah.
You never know.
It was the least painful of the ones that are involved here. Like
this
it was
is
the
true.
One that mattered. Like it was.
This is true. Yeah. But go look at the comments that we got on YouTube that day.
Yeah,
a lot of people were not happy.
Not happy.
Second half because the first half was so good. Yeah. Let's go to the Dale McCullough Award given to USC's best coach of the year. There's no nominees this year.
Yeah.
Moving on. Let's go to the drool-worthy moments of the year. As expected, as explained, as said, drool-worthy. What's drool-worthy?
Drool-worthy is used to be a word that was reserved for tight ends and their touchdowns. But mostly it's just that the plays that make you drool, that get your mouth watering, that get you excited, that you just know it when you see it.
Yeah. You know what? I think that's it's a good way of putting it.
He makes me drool.
Yes. Let's go to the drool-worthy moments of the year. There's the Brendan Rice TD bomb against UCLA. If your brain bleeds that one, you might not remember that, but... that pass from Caleb Williams was spectacular. The Caleb Williams overtime TD run against Arizona. The Kalen Bullock pick six against Utah. The flea flicker touchdown against Washington. Zachariah Branch and Taj Washington played a big role there. Marshawn Lloyd's cutback TD against Colorado. Couldn't go left, went right instead. And then there's Zachariah Branch's kickoff return for a touchdown against San Jose State. In week one, what is your drool-worthy moment of the year? Have a vote of any of those six.
Again, all good ones, all a good reminder that there were good moments from this season. I obviously have a favorite, but I will not speak it yet.
Okay. But you guys, listen to it. Go vote. Go vote. let's talk about the defensive MVP. Yes, we got to talk this one out. There's Bear Alexander, Kalen Bullock, Eric Gentry, Jamil Muhammad, Jalen Smith, and Solomon Burt. Those are your nominees.
Yeah. The worst defense in the history of USC. There were some players who tried to pull their weight. They tried.
Yeah.
Good job. Good effort.
Yeah, make your vote. Make your vote. On offense, there's the MVPs of MVP nominees. Brendan Rice, Caleb Williams, Jonah Monheim, Marshawn Lloyd, Taj Washington, and Zachariah Branch.
Yeah, this one's a whole lot easier nominee list to compile. And I think there's really only one answer.
Probably, which could be the same answer for the final one, which is the Trojan of the Year, which, of course, is... either Brendan Rice, Caleb Williams, Kalen Bullock, Marshawn Lloyd, Taj Washington, or Zachariah Branch. Are they the same as the offensive MVPs? Yes, except Kalen Bullock.
There's one defensive player in there, I suppose.
There you go.
Yeah, I the Roddy's this year were a little bit tough in a season that was, we probably just could have had a list of 25 brain bleach moments. you know, you also got to find the bright side, and I think it's really good to look back and remember all of the good moments, the good players, recognize the things that made us happy, and then laugh at the things that made us sad at the end of a season. So yeah, we're looking forward to everybody voting, everybody weighing in. If you want to on this video, leave a comment with your thoughts on any of the, if you want to make an argument for any particular nominee for any of these categories,
yeah,
by all means, make your pitch, and we'll see you next week to reveal the winners.
Yeah, absolutely. So have your say in the comments, in the chats, and certainly at the polls. So be sure to click the link in the show notes or in the chat and go make your vote there. Let's get to the mailbag and then wrap this thing up, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right. Donnell Smith says, the disrespect for Pete Carroll here is real. Saying he couldn't adjust or wouldn't continue to win championships, and he went to the NFL, won a Super Bowl, and had 10 playoff appearances. Wow. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that it's important to say that, like...
This is all relative to Nick Saban, the only one who's ever done it at this level, this high, like... Most elite head coaches in college football have a trajectory closer to what we imagine Pete Carroll's would have been.
Yeah.
After 10 years at USC, it's hard to sustain success for more than 10 years. That's why Nick Saban doing it has been so astounding. Mm-hmm. Absolutely astounding.
I think to your point too, like, yeah, Pete Carroll went to the NFL, basically did the same thing he did at SC, where he had a group of guys, built an incredible staff to start with in Seattle. He did have brain drain. He did lose the Legion of Boom and all that stuff, but like, he was able to still be flexible, I think, a little bit more.
That's not to say that
in Seattle than he was at SC, but like, it was different situations.
But that's the thing is what you see from Pete Carroll in Seattle and what you see from him at USC is the success of winning a Super Bowl, winning national titles, all of those kinds of stuff. And then he's never bad. Like, the Seahawks were competitive the whole way through, but they had a hard time getting back up over the hump and getting back up into that mode of having the championship success, because that's what happens most of the time. That's what sets people like Bill Belichick and Nick Saban apart, is that most people aren't able to then do it again and again and again and again. Ultimately, what gets Pete Carroll ousted in Seattle is not that he was ever bad. Like, there's a reason why no one was certain that he would even be ousted in the first place, because they were still quite good most of the time, decent half of the time. They just eventually, you can't go that many years without a playoff win. Like,
it's similar to the Mike Tomlin thing, right?
Yeah, it's exactly
the thing about Mike Tomlin is that, yeah, he's never been bad in Pittsburgh, right? Yeah. Like, even when they aren't a contender, they're still a hard team to face and all that kind of stuff, right? So like, it's the same thing. And I think there's a huge credit. That's how you end up being a legendary coach. But the fraction of the fraction of the percent of the legendary coaches are the Sabins and the Bear Bryants and the Belichicks are the guys who can, you know, have multiple runs at things. And I think that
the magic wears out too. See Bill Belichick.
Like, right. Yeah. But I think that Bill Belichick had multiple eras, right?
Yeah.
Like, you look at Phil Jackson, the NBA, he had three different dynasties, right? I guess you could argue four. He had four different dynasties.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Like, that's a testament to how good you are. Scotty Bowman in the NHL had three different dynasties. That's a testament to how good you are when you have multiple dynasties. Pete Carroll had two, one in the college football, one in the NFL.
And by the way, I think the fact that Pete Carroll
won a Super Bowl and won
a national championship makes him one of the all-time great head coaches.
Yes.
What he did was different to Saban. He has a leg up on Nick Saban, by the way,
because Nick Saban couldn't do it in the NFL.
So you can sort of weigh those against each other, but what Nick Saban did as a college football head coach is still the most impressive thing I've ever seen from a coach.
Especially when the game of football, I think, changed way considerably more in the NFL. In college football in the last 15 years than it has in the NFL.
Yeah.
In the last 15 years. And it's changed considerably in the NFL.
Yeah.
But it's changed even more so in college football because of things like NIL and things like the transfer portal and the different schematic changes and all those things that have changed. So, I don't think there's disrespect here for Pete Carroll at all. It's just more so like praise for how good Nick Saban is.
Yeah.
West Texas Mike says, I would arrange a banquet of USC Super Bowl players and yell at them like Willy Wonka, you get nothing, you lose. Good day, sir.
That was in reply to the Roddies. I get the instinct. I get it. But, you know, also, you gotta find something to be happy about.
Well, this is why, there's chip posting. Like, the brain bleach moment you'd like to forget of the year.
Yeah.
You can have fun in different ways, for sure. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us here on a Monday. We're going to come back next week and have the Roddies. We want to hear from you guys, so be sure to put in your votes, and we'll have so much more next week to talk about more USC football and the Roddies as well. So get your votes in and give us your emails, phone calls, voicemail, 818-643-7227 is the phone number. Until next week, we will see you.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.